Blog Talk Radio.
Largest shark that ever existed.
Thought to have been extinct for 2 million years.
There are things out there. We need to find it and kill it.
Why don't you just put a tracker on it? Did you guys ever watch Shark Week?
The Meg, only in cinemas.
It's the Megalodon. Welcome everybody to Cinema Royale. I am Travis Hobson of the Punch Drunk Critics. And that clip you just heard was from The Meg. This is the new prehistoric shark thriller starring Jason Statham. It's Jason Statham versus a prehistoric shark. How can you not want to see that? And apparently, you did want to see it because the movie kicked ass at the box office over the weekend. I'll talk a little bit about that in just a few minutes when we review the film, me and Matt Razak of Flixus.com. We're going to talk about The Meg and whether or not it's something the rest of you should check out, those of you who didn't last weekend. Also, after that, once we get rid of Matt, I'm going to make him stick around for a little while to talk about some other things. But once we get rid of him, I'll talk about Spike Lee's Black Klansman. I can't let the week go by without talking about that. It's Spike Lee's first film in a couple years. His first film since Chirac, which I thought was okay. A lot of people didn't like it. I thought it was him on the way to finding his voice again. I think Spike Lee went through a period where, you know, he was trying to figure out where his place was. You know, he was always a director who was in step with the times, at least early on in his career, had something about race and all sorts of different things. And I think over the years, he kind of lost his way. And I thought Chirac was him on the verge of finding his voice again. And I think Black Klansman is him back in the groove. So I'll talk a little bit about that later on. And then, like I said, we're going to keep Matt around because there's a lot of stuff that I want to go over this week. There's some big stuff that happened over the last few days. And the biggest, of course, has to do with the Academy Awards, which have made some huge changes that are going to take place at next year's show. I mean, they aren't screwing around here, man. They've introduced a popular film category into the mix. And as you expect, everything just sort of blew up from there, man. I mean, that I've seen so many stupid think pieces on this whole situation. That's crazy. But then again, you know me, I hate think pieces about movies. They get on my nerves. But we got to talk about it, though, because it's huge. And we got to figure out whether or not this is a good thing or not, what this means for the show in general, but also superhero movies and blockbusters. And what are we going to start seeing now? And I think that's going to be very, very interesting. I also want to talk a little bit about what's going on with Star Trek IV. Looks like there could be a couple of really big departures from that franchise. Ruby Rose is Batwoman. I want to talk about that, especially what happened to her over the weekend. And those darn Idris Elba Bond rumors, it just won't go away, even though they should. We're going to talk about that with Matt as well. But let me stop talking about the guy and actually bring him in so he can talk for himself. Matt Razak of Flixus.com. What's up, man?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you? How have you been? Oh, you're breaking up. You're breaking up. Where are you at? Are you underground?
I'm hiding in a cave. You know.
Okay, now you're sounding better now. Wherever you are, stay there.
All right.
Don't move.
All right, okay. I will do that.
No, it's good to hear from you, man. I saw you last at the Meg, so but we didn't really talk about it, which is good. I didn't want to, because we were talking about maybe doing a show. So the Meg is exactly what I described it as earlier. It is Jason Statham versus a giant prehistoric shark. And, you know, summer movies and shark movies, like, go hand in hand. Like, the summer season shark movies, they tend to do well. Even 47 Meters Down did well last year, and that was a pretty low-key affair. I always think back to a movie like Open Water, you know, which is a movie that I really liked. That came out at just the right time. And this does as well. It made $141 million at the box office. So clearly, you know, I think we're going to start seeing even more shark movies or similar type movies during the summer based on the success of this one. Probably a Meg sequel, I would imagine.
Yeah,
but
I think so.
Yeah, it seems like it. It's Jason Statham and a deep sea diving team basically taking on a prehistoric shark, a megalodon that has risen up from the surface. They basically unleashed this, which is how these things tend to happen. And what I was surprised about with this movie, I was surprised, one, that so many didn't seem to like it. At least so many critics didn't seem to like it. I was surprised by that. And I was surprised that it's not a straight-up comedy like I thought it was going to be. Like, I thought at first that they would try to make it sort of like a Piranha 3D type movie. It's kind of silly and over the top. But it's not. It's actually pretty straightforward monster movie. And I actually think that's a good thing. Now, there are funny parts to it. You hear the part in a clip where Rainn Wilson's character is like, haven't you guys ever seen Shark Week? Well, yeah, it's a pretty common thing. You would think these brainiacs and this diving team would know, hey, why don't we just track this thing? But there are silly parts like that all throughout the movie, too. But for the most part, I think it plays it pretty straight, and I like that. I'm not saying it's necessarily scary. The shark is too visible for that. But I thought it was a good idea for them to play it straight and to have it be sort of, you know, have the shark be really dangerous and not goofy. But what did you think about the Meg?
Yeah, I mean, I had tons of fun. I think it's as dumb as you wanted it to be, but it works. Yeah. And part of that is because it toes that line, and one of the reasons it does is because it plays straight. But it toes that line between Jaws and Sharknado. Like, it's not all out camp. And it's not this horror, suspense, shark movie masterpiece. But it's right in between those. And it works because it knows it's dumb, but it never fully, you know, goes super dumb. Like,
right.
So
there's Tara Reid walking in on this thing.
Right, yeah. You know, it's having fun, but it's also not being a joke of itself. And you mentioned sort of what's the actor? I'm totally blanking on his name, but the millionaire.
Rainn Wilson, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He was sort of he was almost the audience, because there were moments where he would say a line and that would be exactly what I would be yelling at the screen if I yelled at movie screens. There's always this little reminder that, yes, we know it's dumb. We're just having fun. Come on, have some fun with us. And I guess I can understand how you can come out of that movie just being like, oh, that was so stupid and nothing worked, blah, blah. But I couldn't. I came out and I was like, that was, you know, everything fit together. I do wish it had gotten the R rating. I know there were both Statham and the director had sort of talked about that. But I thought they made it work within a PG-13. It's pretty gory for PG-13.
A little bit. I mean, I see the benefit of the way they did it. Obviously, the box office paid off for them.
Yeah.
Not going with the R rating, because it would have probably made a lot less without it. I mean, with the R rating, it would have made less. But I never sat there being like, man, I wish this was more gory. Like, I never got that impression. I never got that feeling. I was watching something where I was like, oh, well, that scene was clearly cut for the PG-13. Like, I never got that feeling. You know, and sometimes when you watch a movie like that where they did take those steps to go for the all audience rating, you know, you can sense it and you can see it when it happens. I didn't get that feeling this time. They seem to do a pretty good job of having the shark be brutal and terrorizing without being, you know, without it being, you know, egregious, you know? So I thought that was good. I thought it was good the way they did that.
I honestly wouldn't have even, like, it wouldn't have even occurred to me that they were going, that at one point they had an R-rated version if it hadn't come out, you know, if the quotes from Statham and Turtle, not to be confused with
puzzle director Mark Turtletop, which I keep every time I write about either one of them, I get their first mixed up. That thing I wrote a post a while back where I actually wrote
how,
like a whole.
How can there be two? That's such a weird last name. How are there two directors?
Yeah,
successful
I
directors.
For a while that the puzzle director was the same guy who did National Treasure, and it's not. They're not the same guy at all. So, but you know. I love the cast in this movie too. You know, besides Statham, you got Lee Bingbing, who I really like a lot. Cliff Curtis, who I think is great in everything. Rainn Wilson, we talked about before. It's a lot of fun. I mean, you know, where it goes off the rails a little bit is when you're trying to make Jason Statham into a romantic lead. I mean, that just does not. I mean, it doesn't work at all. Yeah, you have more chemistry with the shark than you do with Lee Bingbing.
I thought he played with the daughter. I thought they worked together fine too. And then you had this charming relationship between him. Cause he does, he plays like, you know, gruff, but loving really well. And that works for like a dad daughter sort of style relationship. So you had that one when it worked, like just so harshly juxtaposed against the romantic relationship, which didn't work. I mean, I don't know whose fault it was, but nothing between them worked.
No, nothing. They were trying to set something up like they were at odds, like in their, like their approach to tracking and capturing the shark. But they really weren't. I mean, they were. No, there really wasn't any tension there. If there was some tension there, then maybe we could be like, okay, well, there's some sexual stuff going on here under the surface. But there really wasn't any of that. I mean, they were both pretty much on the same page. I mean,
their banter and like the shirtless, everything, like if it was like slightly twisted, could have been straight out of like The Office, like that awkward sort of, you know, oh God, is this really happening kind of thing.
He walks in on him and he's just come out of the shower. It's like, okay.
Okay, we get it. All right, movie, I understand.
Which I think, by the way, that Jason Statham has gone to the Dwayne Johnson School of Working Out. I mean, he's really starting to pump up now, and it has to be because he's starring with Johnson in all these Fast and Furious movies now.
He's got the spinoff coming. So I mean, you don't want to look like nothing next to Dwayne Johnson. So.
Right.
Which is,
compare Jason Statham in his cameo in the first Fast and the Furious movie that he appeared in to the Jason Statham now. Jesus. It's like he put on a bunch of and it hasn't been that long, but hey, clearly, you know, Dwayne Johnson's spreading around his knowledge. But then you look at Dwayne Johnson in The Rundown compared to now, it's like two totally different people.
Oh,
it's like,
or his like early wrestling years. It's just, it doesn't even, I mean, he's a wall of human right now. Like, I don't, that doesn't, I was sitting there when I was writing my review thinking of Skyscraper, which is another sort of, which has a lot in common with this, you know, it's part Chinese, definitely made for the China market, but it's a big, dumb action movie with a big, dumb premise. But for me, Skyscraper didn't work at all. And it was, I was thinking back like, okay, I could level most of the same complaints at The Meg So why did I have fun at this one and it just come out as Skyscraper? You know, bored, basically. And I, you know, I got to the end and I think it's because the Meg, like, hits its points. Like, you anticipate Jason Statham punching a shark in the face to be awesome, and then you see it, and it is. Whereas in something like Skyscraper, like, there's no there aren't those moments, like, of bad movie greatness that come out where you get that, like, stupid thrill. And the Meg pulls them off, whereas something like Skyscraper just didn't.
Yeah, I was thinking that maybe there should be some sort of crossover between The Meg and Dwayne Johnson's film Rampage.
Yes.
Have them both taking on killer monsters, killer mutant monsters, at the same time. I think that would be perfect if they could somehow mix those together. They're already teaming up.
Jason can be the Aquaman of the Dwayne Johnson monster universe.
Exactly. I mean, why not? I mean, imagine how much money that would make. They just change the Hobbs and Shaw script a little bit and have, like, the villains be, like, a giant werewolf and a giant.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure the plotting of that movie is going to be so simple. That will be an easy switch.
It's Fast and Furious. Crazier things have happened in that franchise than that. So I think it'd be perfectly okay.
That's basic where they basically, like, if they want to keep leveling up that franchise, that's basically where they have to go.
Yeah, no, those movies are like Dragon Ball now. They just have to keep leveling up, and they just have to keep
over 9,000.
Which is why when people started joking that they might go into space, it doesn't seem like that outlandish. Like, it's
no, not at all.
Like, can't you?
Especially if they go.
Have you seen them being rocketed in space to stop some terrorist outfit? And it's like, I can, sadly.
Not rocketed. They're going to drive a car off a ramp fast enough to get into space.
It'll be a rocket car, of course, you know.
Secret U.S. military rocket car.
Somehow Vin Diesel's car will still get up there, too, and he'll get a chance to drive.
He'll secretly strap it to the underside. It'll be like one of those cheesy reveals.
We were joking. I was joking during the Meg about Ruby Rose, because she's in the cast too, and it's been kind of a crazy week for her. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. But it was funny. I was going through some of my old posts, and I was like looking at the posters for the movie, and like the Chinese ones have Ruby Rose on them, and in fact she has her own posters for the Chinese version, and it's like she was just like a tech person. Like, she didn't have that much.
I know. She had like three. I didn't know she was that big in China.
They love her. I mean, Ruby Rose she does all these action sequels that have Chinese money in them. You know, like Triple X.
So she's, you
know?
Yeah.
So they like her, and I'm betting they're gonna want. They'll probably want to see her Batwoman show, I guess, whenever that starts. I'm sure it'll be popular overseas too. But there's something about her, man. People like Ruby Rose overseas. She hasn't done anything here, you know. But
now she's done the Meg, I guess.
Now she's done the Meg.
She's, yep. Or the five lines she had in it.
it seemed like they were trying, and I'm sure this was a conscious effort on their part too. But they seemed like. When Statham's character first is introduced to her, they were trying to establish something between them because he's like, I like her. You seem like you're the only one here who knows what they're doing. And I was like, that came out of nowhere. All right. He didn't do that for anybody else. She didn't do anything special.
Yeah. Well, she had funky hair. That makes her. She's a rebel.
Right. But I think that was, again, one of those conscious efforts on their part to highlight somebody who was popular in China, which is her, make her seem like she's important. It's like, and Skyscraper did that. You know, Skyscraper had at least half of it was a Chinese cast, and there was practically a whole subplot with the cops who were. You know, kind of just watching Johnson's character on the streets. That's all they were doing. But they tried to create like a whole subplot out of that and it didn't feel like it made any sense in the rest of the movie.
No,
and
it was completely detached.
Yeah, completely detached, and it was because they were speaking to the Chinese market rather than trying to tell a story first. And it's like, and I can see that becoming an issue in some of these movies going down the line, you know, because that in Rampage, it was really like, come on, what is going on here?
Yeah. Well, and I think the Ming actually does a decent enough. I mean, leaving Ming and Jason, didn't have chemistry, but at least they were characters, and there is these cast, but they all are they all are part of the story, not just sort of shoved in there. So, yeah,
it makes sense. And the little girl is definitely cute. The little girl is a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I don't know if she's a big Chinese little girl star, child star or something, but she definitely pulls her weight.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. So The Meg, I think, is something that we both recommend people go and check out. Like I said, it made $141 million over the weekend, which is really good, way above expectations projections for the movie. So people were obviously very interested in seeing this, and I think it'll probably do well this upcoming week too, even against Crazy Rich Asians, which is probably going to – I'm still curious about how that's going to do.
Yeah.
I know it's got a popular – it's a popular bestseller, and people have been really excited about it because of the, you know, all-Asian cast, and it's a uniquely Asian story. But it doesn't always translate into big box office. So we'll see. We'll see. It's actually a good movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't talk about it too much, but Crazy Rich Asians is actually pretty good. So we'll see how The Meg does against that next week. All right, so Matt's going to stick around. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm going to pick his brain about some of the big news this week, including the big changes with the Oscars, the popular film category. I really want to hear what he has to say about that. So we'll be right back, y'all. Everybody for checking us out on Blog Talk Radio as part of Critical, the Movie Critics Network. You can find us there at blogtalkradio.com/critical, and of course also on our Facebook page, so go and check us out there. All right, so Mac here with Matt Razak of Flixes.com. We just finished talking about The Meg, and I want to get his opinion on a few things that happened this week. Hey, Matt, have you heard about these changes that they made to the Oscars?
It must be small because no one's been reading about it. What do you? More people in the audience or something? I don't.
That's it. They're going to start the show earlier, so it ends before midnight. That's it. The Oscars have introduced a popular achievement of an achievement in popular film category. This is a category that obviously is going to run parallel to the Best Picture category. It'll be for whatever they decide are popular movies. Now, we don't have what kind of criteria that means. We can assume it means big blockbuster movies, superhero films, and things of that nature that don't normally make it into Best Picture category. And you can get an idea of what it probably means because Mark Wahlberg was happy about it. So he's probably like, oh yes, you know, Mile 22 might win something next year. So he's probably, that's the kind of film that they're probably. I know, probably not, but But that's exactly the kind of film that's probably end up in that category. Now, they also made some changes to the way awards are presented. Some awards will not be televised. They'll be done during commercial breaks, and if there are any notable speeches, they'll be played in part during during the broadcast. And I think that, you know, while they didn't say the criteria for that either, I imagine it'll be mostly technical categories, short film categories, things that nobody gives a shit about. You know, although they might randomize it, I guess the big categories are obviously going to be televised. Go ahead, Matt.
See, my problem with that is the best speeches come from the people who, like, this is their only time they're ever going to be.
They're never going to be there,
right?
Again.
And that's the short film, folks. That's the, you know, costume. Take out those. Sound design. Short film, keep in. You know, the sound design guys are usually okay, but nah. The short film guys and the short documentary guys who spent the last 15 years getting 10 minutes of film together, like, keep those.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, and I'd like to see some of those things stay. I think this change means nothing overall, and that the time that they supposedly gain by putting these things during commercial breaks, they will fill with something else. They will just fill with another performance or some skit or something that they'll let Jimmy Kimmel bring in more people from outside the building to come in there and be surprised. You know, they'll do something dumb like that again. But the show is going to be I host an Oscar night party at the Arden Cinema and Draft House every year. I have for years, and look, I would love to not have a 6-hour night. And I would love for my night to be 3 hours. I would think that would be great. If I can get paid the same amount for half the time, awesome. But I don't imagine it happening. I imagine it will still be after midnight when I go home.
It's a live show. It will never, ever be the amount of time it's supposed to be.
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't know why he did that. But the popular film category is the big one that people are talking about. And I find it interesting, the timing on this, Matt. I find it interesting that the year when it looks like Black Panther should be making it into the best picture category, they come up with this side piece category. That's like, because, you know, no movie that makes it into the popular film category will be put into the best picture category. That's a given. That's not going to happen. So Black Panther will not make it into the best picture category. It'll make it into the popular film category, and it'll probably win, you know, because people love that movie, and it's a critical favorite and a box office favorite. So it'll probably win. But it just seems like it's being given the booby prize. And I just find the timing of this very, very curious.
I think the closest thing to relate it to is when they made Best Animation category. And we haven't seen an animated film. Right? Hold on. Now I'm going to rack that up. Pretty sure, yeah. Have we seen was Toy Story 3 nominated?
Wasn't Toy Story 3 nominated for Best Animated Film? I don't know if it made it into the best.
They're not that would be the closest thing, and I'm pretty sure that there hasn't been an animated film nominated for Best Picture. So that's what this does. Putting this separate category, I mean that's what it does. These movies.
It was nominated for Best Picture.
Well, then I was wrong.
that was 2010. Wasn't that the year after they expanded it to 10? Wasn't that the first year?
Yeah. Yep.
Was that the second year?
I think that was the second year.
Because it came after it was basically in response to the Dark Knight not getting anything.
Right.
It was basically in response to that. So I think it was like the year after, and that was 2008. So maybe it was 2009, the first year they expanded it to 10, the best picture category to 10, in order to get movies like The Dark Knight in there. And the first few years they did. I mean,
right.
I mean, Avatar was in there.
Yeah.
Avatar
yeah.
was in there the first year. You know, a movie like The Blind Side, which ain't great, you know, but it was a hit, got in there. You know what I mean? So they let some of these popular films in there the first few years, and then over the last few years, they've kind of stopped doing it. You know,
yeah.
it's like, it's just like, let's put in more Lady Birds. You know, let's put
right.
in more movies.
Yeah, it's basically 10 independent films again. Like, and the major drama release and whatever costume piece was the big hit of the year.
Yeah,
and by big hit, I mean, you know, made $10 million. So,
exactly. So what does this do? What do you think this does now? I mean,
I don't feel like more people are going to tune in just because they're going to see the names of five blockbusters.
Right.
You know, like I guess maybe if people tune in to see the stars that are in those blockbusters, but
those people are there anyway.
I feel like the issue
and they're presenters. They're there anyway.
Right. Yeah, they get invited anyway. So I feel like the issue is not with the awards, but with the people voting for the awards who need a major shift in what they perceive to be quality movies, which, you know, doesn't mean you have to let in the biggest blockbuster. If the biggest blockbuster isn't the best directed movie, Avatar, but it, like, this is not an issue solved by changing your awards. It's an issue solved by changing how the people who vote for your awards perceive film.
It's a marketing issue.
Yeah.
Because I mean, the way I look at this is, the reason why they did this is because every year we get that same question. I know I get it every damn year. Why don't they pick a movie that people have actually heard of? I haven't heard of any of these movies. And I hate getting those comments every year. And I'm like, the movies are out there. You just need to go find them.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's not as
if there's any shortage of people telling you, hey, go see this movie. It's like, you're sitting there talking to me right now. It's like, I guarantee you, if there's a great movie out there, I probably told you to go see it. It's like, I mean, I'm sure those things are everywhere. These are the same people who go to Rotten Tomatoes every day. If it wasn't the case, people wouldn't be complaining about Rotten Tomatoes having too much power. But those movies are there. They're there.
Right. Yeah. They're on the list. You can see them.
they're at the top, you know, because they rank them by percentage. Look at them right there. So it's a matter of marketing. You got to get these things. You got to get the movies out to people. And then, it's a marketing problem because half the time, these independent movies become blockbusters based on the fact that they're Oscar nominated. I mean, that's where
right.
most of them make their money. Like 80% of their money is after they get nominated. They get the Oscar buzz.
Yeah,
on
the re-releases. Yeah.
You know? So it's like,
it's
a matter of getting the word out about it. That's all it is.
Yeah. There are many issues leading into this, and none of them are solved by a new awards category. That's what I'd say.
It just makes an unnecessary division. I mean, yeah. You know what I mean? People already have a certain perception of movies, and now this drives it home even more that superhero movies and blockbuster movies aren't the best movies. You know,
right.
and I don't think they need to be encouraging that perception. I don't think this category is going to be long in existence. Let's put it that way. I don't know when the
first producers get up there. Yeah.
Right.
I was going to say when the first producers get up there and look at the trophy for achievement in popular film and go, thanks, I guess, and then walk off the stage. Like, it's going to be crystal clear. Like, are movie people even going to care about this award? I can't even see that. I mean, Hollywood seems already upset about it. I don't see someone winning this and being like, yeah, thanks for the, you know, kids table Oscar.
Yeah. And can we be honest about something else? Disney's probably going to take this award every goddamn year. Can we just be honest?
Well,
that
they release half the blockbusters. I mean,
yes, they do.
So
this will be the unofficial Disney award. They might as well make it a golden mouse. You know? It's crazy, man. I just don't get it, man. And as somebody who was a voter on the Critics' Choice Awards, where we have like best action movie and best action hero part of our category, trust me, it does not do anything for your ratings. Okay, no one cares. All right, no one cares. No one shows up for those. Nobody shows up
now,
for any of that.
So as a voter there, like, so you vote on different genres. Does that make you preclude, like, I personally, in terms of your personal experience, does that make you preclude those films in some way from, like, best movie of the year?
Best picture? You know what? I think I probably do it unconsciously. Like, I don't even realize that I do it. I think I probably do that. I haven't gone back and really thought about my votes, but I'm willing to bet that most of the time I don't put those movies in there because they're separated, you know. Unless it's like it's a really unique situation, like I probably put Rogue One like in the Best Picture category like that year, you know.
Right.
Everything.
Yeah.
But I think for the most part, I probably do leave them out, and I bet the majority of voters do too. You know, I mean, it's just, it's, even if you don't think about it, the division is clear. So I don't know. I'm very interested in seeing how this plays out when the awards come around. I think the first couple of years you'll see people pretend to be excited, and then there'll be like there'll be somebody like James Cameron that wins something, and he'll be like,
oh my God. Can you imagine James Cameron getting out there and just tearing the award apart?
Exactly.
That will happen. Oh my God! So I was dreading seeing Avatar 2, but now I need it. I need it so badly.
And I thought about him because Avatar is sitting right here, like in front of me, like a picture of it. Because I was looking it up on the date that it won, or the date that it was nominated. So it was like James Cameron's picture is like right there in front of me.
Yeah.
Like James Cameron to win, and it'll be disaster.
Well, he's the director who would do it. I mean, without a doubt,
he would tear that thing down so bad that they wouldn't even bring it back. Let's move on to something else here. So we talked about Ruby Rose earlier. Ruby Rose has been she's been named to play Batwoman in the upcoming CW series. She's going to debut in the annual CW Arrowverse crossover. And this is a big deal. The character she's playing, Kate Kane, is LGBTQ. So is Ruby Rose. I don't know much about this Batwoman otherwise. I've only read a couple of comics with her. I've kind of gotten over the CW shows a little bit. Maybe it's because they've been away for a few months on break. But this is a pretty big deal. And you know, she's taken some heat over it. You know, over the weekend she deleted her Twitter account and I think blocked comments on her Instagram because people were attacking her for a number of different reasons. But I thought it was ironic, and you know, that she's kind of being attacked by the LGBTQ community, who don't think she's LGBTQ enough for the role, which is, you know, I guess a refreshing twist on the racist trolls. but it's still odd. And I wanted to get your opinion on it. If you'd heard about any of this, and what's your thoughts on Ruby Rose being cast as Batwoman?
Yeah. I mean, I just rolled. I didn't even dig into it. Like, I literally saw the article, a headline, read the article, and was like, no, I'm not. That's not even, I can't believe this is happening. Like, she, you know, the initial reaction by everyone was how perfect the casting is. And it's really great casting. And I think she's going to do fantastic on the CW shows. And I hope she gets her own. I mean, that seems like a foregone conclusion, but I'm, you know, the Batwoman show is amazing, but I couldn't, like, I didn't even, you know, sometimes I'll click through and they have the tweets listed on the article or something. I'll click through and sort of dig a little deeper for that. I was just like, no, I do not need this. I don't, that is the most ridiculous thing I have ever heard. Like, how, I guess she was, people were yelling at her because she hadn't come out when she had already come out, just not to the world on a...
She described herself like, as gender fluid for a long time, and I think some of them were upset by that, which is like, come on, man. I mean,
right. I mean, you know, what if she is gender fluid? Right? Like,
who cares?
That's exactly you want. Right. That's what you want. You know, your entire argument is that we can all be who we want to be, and here's someone being who she wants to be, and you're yelling at her.
Yeah, exactly.
So
exactly. I don't understand.
You know.
I don't understand it, and I hope. Yeah, I'm getting sick of these stories about, you know, all the toxic fandom out there. I just thought it was interesting the angle some of the people were coming at on this one, and some of them are coming at her because they don't think she's a good actress. And okay, you want to make that case, fine. I mean, I can't say she's a bad actress because she's only had limited opportunities to be a dramatic actress. On Orange is the New Black is really the only thing I can think of. Everything else has been some sort of action role. And I'm pretty sure that this show will ask her to be more of an action star than anything else. But it's just, you know, if you want to make that case, she's not a good actress, fine. But attacking her for who she is, attacking her personally for it too, because it was, she posted a pretty long Twitter message before she deleted the account. And attacking her personally for who she is as a person seems to be counterintuitive.
I don't see how that improves anything. I don't know where these people are. Like no one I know is acting like this. It's just ridiculous.
I've heard none of this from people, so I don't know. And I posted that I'm not so sure that any of these people making these comments are legitimately part of the LGBTQ community. They might be people just looking to stir shit up, you know, and that wouldn't surprise me.
Right, yeah.
Like, I feel most of the people who do these things are just people looking to stir things up because they know it's effective and they know it gets headlines. And in some cases, it changes entire franchises, you know, so they do it. And
right.
It's just crazy.
Yeah.
We've empowered them to do it, so, you know, what can you do? The Idris Elba as James Bond rumors surfaced again, Matt, and I'm tired of them at this point. It's been like 10 years of Idris Elba James Bond rumors, and this one was the worst, though. This one was – I read about these about this stuff over the weekend, and I was like – and I didn't post it because I was like, well, the original story was in the Daily Star, which is like a site that nobody would trust – to break movie news. So I was like, okay,
right.
I'm just going to skip it. And, you know, after reading the article, I was like, well, there's nothing here. I was like, there's nothing here. It's like Antoine Fuqua talking about, you know, he mentions Idris Elba just in passing, but it's like, he's not saying anything about him being up for the role at all. And I was like, so I'll just let it go. And then I woke up next morning and went online and there was all these articles that he was the front runner to be James Bond again. And I was like, this can't be based off what I read last night. And it was.
They haven't even started shooting the next Bond. You think the producers are I'm sorry. Like, I'm – he's too old. You cannot launch a new cycle of Bond with – age. Like, it's just not he looks young and people look way younger now, but like, you want to get five movies out of an actor, six maybe,
right,
for the next rotation. He's gonna be ancient by then, like Roger Moore ancient. I love Craig. I think Daniel Craig's a great James Bond. You know, if it was going to happen for Elba, it needed to happen when Craig was initially cast. Like, that's when he was in the right age. Like,
they should have shut everybody up and had Elba play a villain in a Bond movie.
That would have been amazing. Oh man, that'd be so good.
That would have shut everybody up. You would have got to see Idris Elba in a Bond movie, and that would have been it. And then people could turn their attention to trying to find who the next black person to be Bond would be. I'm tired of hearing Idris Elba's name attached to 007. And apparently he is too, because he tweeted something about, you know, don't believe the hype. You know, I mean, he's not ever going to play James Bond.
I know,
he might,
yeah,
play,
and,
he
even,
might play a Bond-ish character in a movie someday. But
right.
No, he's not going to be James Bond. And who knows? They may pick a black actor to be James Bond somewhere down the line. I don't think it'll be the next Bond. I think it'll be somewhere in the future. Maybe after these producers on Bond are dead and gone.
I think it'll have to be after the Broccoli's. Yeah, right. I think that'll have to be it.
Yeah, Barbara Broccoli does not strike me as somebody who wants to do that. She's kind of a traditionalist. I just don't see it happening.
Right.
And frankly, yeah. I don't care. I don't care if there's ever a black James Bond. Speaking as a black person, I don't give a damn if there's ever a black James Bond. I don't need a black James Bond. You know, I'd rather they create a new franchise for a black secret agent. That would be great. That's what I would like to see. Give me a good one. But I don't need for James Bond to be black. He's a white guy. Fine. I don't care. I don't need James Bond.
Careful, Travis. You're about to become the mouthpiece of a bunch of alt-right websites.
I don't need James Bond to be a woman sometime in the future. I don't need James Bond to be anything but James Bond. I need him to make good movies.
Yeah.
That's all I need them to do.
Yeah.
That's why
I enjoy them. I mean, there's some staples that need to be in there, but like, yeah.
That's all I want. I want a good spy franchise for a black actor. I want a good spy franchise for a woman. I think those would be fantastic to have. And at least they're taking steps to try and do those things. We haven't found them yet, but at least they're trying. I don't need it to be James Bond. That's all. So I'm just sick of those. I'm just sick of the Elba and 007 stuff. I just wish it would go away. And I always feel like the people who write about these things don't really know shit about movies. They just think that idea of Elba as Bond sounds cool, and so they write about it. That's the way I feel.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's, every time it comes, it's a click headline off of some quote from some director tangentially related to something, and you're like, no, what?
Yeah.
You know, you could have basically write that story off your buddy, like, drunkenly saying you want Idris Elba to be Bond in a pub. Like, that's where it is. Like, that's the level of confirmation on anything there.
Crazy. And the last story, this is potentially huge. Chris Pine and Chris Hemsworth could be leaving Star Trek IV, as, you know, it looks like talks with them, contract talks with them have broken down. This would be big because Star Trek IV, this is not the Quentin Tarantino Star Trek movie, which I contend will never, ever see the light of day. It'll never this is the one that will be
stage
a
stage reading.
Yeah, exactly. There'll be a table read of that joint. Zoe Bell as Uhura, yeah, or something. But it'll never happen. It'll never be screened. But the toss of them broken down, and this is a big deal, because the story was really supposed to be centered on their characters. Obviously, Chris Pine is Captain Kirk, but Chris Hemsworth was in the original 2009 film, back before we knew who Chris Hemsworth was, and he played Kirk's father in the opening sequence. It's a great sequence, actually. I still think it's the best sequence of the whole franchise, is that opening sequence of the first movie, which I think is just fantastic.
Yeah.
And that sequence really set Hemsworth on his path going forward. It was how good he was in that scene that really jump-started his career from that point on. But it was supposed to be a story that a time travel-esque story in which they would have been reunited somehow. So if they're gone, they got that throws everything out of whack. They basically got to start over from scratch if that happens. So we don't know what's going to happen from there. But what are your thoughts on this, and what do you want to see happen?
I'm a fan of Pine as Picard, as Kirk. And so I don't want to see him go. I think he's done. I think all the recasts, he's probably nailed, you know, turned the role into his own thing the most. And I don't see how they can. I don't think they can make another Star Trek movie without him.
Yeah.
Hemsworth, they can recast. That's, you know, if Hemsworth walks away, yeah, that, you know, he was great in those 10 minutes, but it was 10 minutes. And they can recast him pretty easily. Just, you know, make him a little younger or something or whatever. Just, you know, cast another Chris.
Yeah. exactly.
There's plenty of them. They look the same.
Yeah, no. cast Liam Hemsworth. They could cast one of the other Hemsworth boys. Cast Luke Hemsworth earlier.
Right, that's right. There's brothers and Chris's galore. You can do this.
Yeah.
Pine, however, I think he's in a spot where the franchise rests on him. You know, you could recast Zachary Quinto and a few of the other, but I don't know if you can ditch Pine now. I think they need to go back to him and say,
I'm actually not so sure you can recast any of them because the ensemble is really the thing that draws people.
That's true.
Movies.
Yeah.
I don't
and they work so well together.
They work so well. And the thing is, though, the reason why the contract talks are broken down is because these movies don't make that much money. I mean, in terms of like big franchises, they don't make that much. I think the most was Star Trek Into Darkness, and that was maybe about $400 million worldwide. You know, and that's not in terms of a big franchise, it's not that much. But Star Trek is always and forever going to be a niche. I mean, it's not Star Wars. It never will be, no matter how hard they try to make it look like Star Wars, which is what this franchise tried to do. It's never going to be that. You're always going to get Star Trek fans who are into it. And I think you probably got a few, you know, you probably got a few more with this version of it, because it is more action oriented than it is sci-fi based, but it's never going to be huge. And I think this is about as big as it's going to get where it is now. But if you lose Pine, it goes nowhere. Like it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist.
Well,
I don't think they can move forward at all if he doesn't sign.
Right. Give him the money and scale back your action budget. Because you're absolutely right. I don't think Star Trek's not going to be that Star Wars franchise. You are not going to dominate the earth on it, but it will bring money in. Like, it's not going to bring in all the money in. It's not going to blow away weekend box offices. But if you do a good story with this cast, you'll get an audience in the theater, especially if it lands good reviews.
Exactly.
So,
all you really needed to do is to make the fans of Star Trek excited in order to buy other Star Trek related things, because Star Trek is a franchise that is built on merchandising as well as anything else. So that's really all you need to do.
They can save a few million if they don't blow up the freaking Enterprise this time. Like,
I know.
Just
I
one.
I want a movie where it stays afloat.
Right. You know, maybe the away team actually goes down to the planet without crashing the entire ship. That's an entire action sequence you don't need. The budget for teleporting people, way less than blowing up the Enterprise.
Exactly. Oh, man. Absolutely right. All right, man. Well, this has been great. We are running low on time, and I've got a review of Black Klansman to do. So, everybody go and check out Matt Razak over at Flixus.com. You're still writing over there, aren't you?
Yep.
Did you write your review of the Meg? Did you write that as well?
I did. It is up there. You can check it out. Along with, what else do we have? Oh, one of my fellow writers saw Slender Man because, I don't know. He hates himself.
Yeah.
And so we've got a review for that up now.
Yeah. John went out and did Slender Man because there was no way I was going to go see it. So
yeah.
John dispatched to go see
it. Took one for the team.
Somebody had to. Nobody wanted to take one for the team to see Dog Days, though, which is hilarious.
Oh,
so we had
oh, man. Sorry. I'm taking all your time. The box office on that is just awful.
It's really, really bad for a movie.
Oh, it didn't even crack the top 10.
All right, everybody, go check out Matt at Flixus.com. Matt, this has been great. I appreciate you coming on, man.
Cool. Yep. Fine. And I'll do it again.
Yeah, definitely do it again soon, man. I'll see you at a screening soon.
Cool.
All right. Later. All right. That is Matt Razak of Flixxus.com. All right. So we are running low on time here. We got 5 minutes left. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play a clip from Black Klansman, and then I'm going to give you a brief review of Spike Lee's new film.
I didn't want to say what trap, but that Peckerwood had a gun in my face. And he was an ass hair away from pulling the trigger.
And he didn't.
But he could have. And then I would have been dead. For what? Stopping some jerk-offs from playing dress-up?
Flip, it's intel.
Well, I'm not risking my life to prevent some rednecks from lighting a couple sticks on fire.
This is the job. What's your problem?
That's my problem. For you, it's a crusade. Mm-hmm. For me, it's a job. It's not personal, nor should it be.
Why haven't you bought into this?
Why should I?
Because you're Jewish, brother. The so-called chosen people. You've been passing for a WASP. White Anglo-Saxon Protestant, cherry pie hot dog white boy. Hmm. That's what some light-skinned black folks do. They pass for white. Doesn't that hatred you've been hearing the Klan say, doesn't that piss you off?
Of course it does.
Then why are you acting like you ain't got skin in the game, brother?
Rookie, that's my fucking business.
It's our business. I'm going to get you your membership card so you can go to the cross burning and get in deeper with these guys.
Right, partner?
That's such a great scene from Spike Lee's new film, Black Klansman, which is out in theaters now. Did really well at the box office this weekend, too. Looks like it's going to be what's already one of Spike Lee's biggest hits, his biggest film since Inside Man in 2006. Yeah, so it's been a long time. And that's such a great scene because it deals with racial identity and the very idea of passing. And you hear John David Washington's character talking to Adam Driver. Adam Driver's character is Jewish, and he's just not invested in the idea of infiltrating the Ku Klux Klan and exposing them for who they are and stopping their plot, which is not only dangerous, but obviously racist. And he's acting as if it doesn't affect him when it clearly does. This is a surprising film from Spike Lee, and I think people are going to be a little taken aback by the approach he takes to it, because you know it's an incredible true story of, you know, Ron Stallworth, first black cop at Colorado Springs Police Department, who goes undercover in the KKK along with the help of his partner Flip, as you just heard in that clip. So it's an interesting subject, a crazy plot, and Spike kind of plays it like of 1970s blaxploitation comedy rather than just a straight up crime movie or even a straight up exploration of race in America. Now, while that stuff is, you know, a little bit of a twist on what we'd expect from Spike, certain aspects of it are pure Spike Lee, and they're powerful. They're very effective. He bookends the film with intense images, you know, and it's one of Spike Lee's greatest gifts, his ability to use imagery to hit us right in our heart. And, you know, he opens the film with scenes from Gone with the Wind, you know, a great film, a movie that we consider a classic, but this is deeply racist as well. And he ends the film with scenes from Charlottesville and Black Lives Matter and the death of Heather Heyer in Charlottesville. And of course, the words of our president, Donald Trump, another racist. And he's making the correlation between then and now and how commonplace racism has become. And I think that's one of the key points of the movie as well. You know, we got Grace playing David Duke, and David Duke's the way he expresses racism is just so banal. It's just sort of like, yeah, you know, it's like nothing to him. And Spike is making a case that, hey, man, racism has been with us for a long time, and it's just sort of become part of the fabric. And that is disturbing as hell. But Black Klansman also has moments of lightness, and it is very funny. It's also kind of violent, but it's worth checking out. Black Klansman is Spike Lee's most powerful and impassioned film in years, and I think people should go and check it out. All right, we are running out of time, and I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Cinema Royale. I want to thank Matt Razak of Flixxus.com for joining me to talk about The Meg. We also talked about a lot of other stuff, so tune into the show, and we'll keep listening to the show if you haven't already. Go back and listen to it again. Yeah, go back and listen to it again, because this was a good show. I'm Travis Hoffman of the Punch Drunk Critics. You can find me every day there at punchdrunkcritics.com. You can find me on WBAL Morning News and WEPA Around Town and lots of other places. Busy. All right. I'll see you next week, guys.